we're in May. We're in May's pee in a podcast, Trevor.
I'm amazed.
You're amazed that it's May already. I'm amazed that it's May as well. So welcome to May, two peas in a podcast. And we're actually going to talk about sustainability in the garden.
Yeah.
And like you were saying, Trevor, it's a bit of a buzzword at the moment, but it's vital.
Yeah, well, not only that, but it's become a paradigm.
It's a paradigm.
It is so widespread that it is now infecting everything and everybody. So the meaning of sustainability is not just in the garden. It's in everything. It's in recycling, it's in energy, it's in the economy as well. So people everywhere are looking at the word sustainability, and it's got an unusual downside in that it doesn't include the word growth. You see, and when you take away growth, if you take away population growth, and you take away economic growth, you've got the whole world in a buzz, because really we've been relying upon growth in order to sustain things. But sustain doesn't mean that. It just means to stability, to endure, to maintain, to hold. And what's more, it is such a big thing that it changes everything. So now you've got to optimize everything without growth. And when you optimize everything without growth, you come up with outcomes that are desirable but will require a total rethink. So what we're after is, well, actually it's not us, it's the next generation, because you could imagine what they're thinking of us. They're thinking that we've used everything up and left nothing for them.
Oh, look, we were part of that fabulous...
lucky generation.
Yeah, but you know, the protest marches that all the kids take part in. That was started, you know, and my mum's there, my mum at the age of 70 is saying to all these gorgeous high school kids, you know, I just want to apologise for what we've done to the planet.
Yeah.
And they were like, that's okay, join in. You know, it was just, I think, but then we've still got that real balance between we want everything new or just we want to, you know, there's no such thing as having you guys have had a fabulous couch for a long time, which inspired me to invest in my fabulous leather chairs, because you want that longevity. That's the other thing with sustainability, you know, longevity. But I agree with you. How do we have it with growth?
Well, yeah, not only that, but they're talking of recycling everything. I was just saying that the Duchess of Oxford, I think it is, Kate, she wore a cloth for the second time, and you get no idea how that repercuts all through the fashion industry. But suddenly they're going to buy clothes back again.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to say, if you paid $10,000 for that piece of cloth that you can only wear once, sell it back to us, because we will sell it again. Yeah, and that is such a quantum change in the overall thinking, and it came so instantly.
What is it, IKEA? You can go to IKEA now and return furniture, which I think is absolutely wonderful. I'd like to return the cupboard I can't put together. That may be my fault.
Well, it's just that up till now, it's been take it out of the ground, make something with it, and then dispose of it. That's what the thinking has been. And there's been no thought of running out. And we're running out.
We are running out.
I mean...
and how much stuff there is.
Yeah,
you know, how much, like I was just saying to you, there's this wonderful advert at the moment. I can't remember the name of the clothing cleaning product, but they're actually selling it from the point of view of, look at all this clothing in landfill. Look after it. And there's less stuff. Which I love that concept.
Yeah, well, they're also talking of a new way of thinking. You see, you know, there's an ecosystem. Well, that system is a way of thinking. So it's not nature that's coming under question, it's us.
Yeah.
You know, nature is endlessly sustainable, because nature comes up with a million different ways of fertilizing things or improving things. If you left nature to itself and got rid of the humans, it would just regenerate itself.
It's kind of the concept of Gaia, isn't it? You know, that the planet will always find a way to regenerate itself, even if it means getting rid of us humans.
Well, yeah, it's us who has to get rid of us, though. And let's face it, we are guilty. We're excessive consumption is almost been our byword, almost as though, well, I mean, I had tenants in one of my places who didn't pay the rent, and my God, they spent it on bloody Superman plastic images of sculpture and, you know, pairs of shoes they threw away the next day and stuff. They just went and bought and bought and bought, as though buying was a drug.
I think it is. I think kind of we joke about the term shopaholic, but I think it is no different to any other addiction where you get that immediate, like, you know, I know I'm currently wearing a fabulous pair of shoes, which I just want to point out you didn't notice, Trevor. But, you know, when they come in the, you know, I do online shopping because I can't stand the shops, but you get the shoes and it's so exciting. I needed a new pair of shoes, so I'm quite good like that.
Yeah.
But you kind of go, I can see that addiction.
Now, in
what's the new stuff? But then quite often it's not qualities.
Well, are you thinking, what am I going to do with it when its useful period is over? Yeah. Are you thinking that?
No, I'm not.
No,
not
nor is anyone.
No, that's true.
Well, there's a whole system needed. And I listened to some speakers on YouTube. A woman was very good on the subject. As you could imagine, there are people who have studied this.
Oh, yeah.
And there's three things involved. One is equity. That is, you've got to distribute the material things equitably between the rich and the poor.
Yep.
Another one is the economy. So you can't do this and turn everyone into pop. You know, you just can't do this and destroy the economy.
Yeah.
And the third thing is you can't do this and destroy the environment.
No, no.
So you should look at Four Corners. Four Corners, the latest one, was about the micro minerals that are going to be needed, cobalt and tungsten. Now, see, tungsten is being mined in Tasmania. And what tungsten is, it's a highly conductive mineral, but it doesn't heat up. So they need tungsten for all these micro tiny things because they want to put current through it and not have a bloody burn on us. And cobalt is like salt in a meal. You put a little bit of cobalt with everything and it all goes better, you know? And there is a dozen of these. And so we're going to start consuming these things, but they're in the sort of protected forest areas. And it's a real problem when you start going through the old slag heaps of Broken Hill where they've already taken out the silver, lead and zinc, and now they're going after the tungsten, manganese and stuff. When they start hitting it with water, all the slurry goes into creek beds and it all gets dirty. So there's a lot in front of us. We are going to change because we're bound to change.
We have to. That's the reality of it.
Yeah, I mean, you look at my vacuum cleaner there it's electric.
And it's the world's most fanciest vacuum cleaner you ever saw in your life.
Yeah, well, it works.
It looks like something that Elon Musk would be proud of.
Yeah, it probably is. But it works on these new batteries. And before too long, you're going to be buying a car that works on these new batteries.
Oh, when I was buying a new car, I did look into it. The decision was purely financial.
Mm.
But then when I buy a car, for example, and thank goodness my son thinks the same way, our first thought is, how is it inexpensive on petrol? We don't want to kind of drive some petrol guzzling burn hole in the ozone layer thing. But then once again, it's that sustain. I've got an electric bike. I love my electric bike. I don't even pretend to ride it when it's not on electric. Someone said to me, so when do you flick it onto the electric? And I went, oh, darling, all the time. All the time. I just love zooming around on it.
Yeah.
But what I also love is whenever I'm riding anywhere, I honestly think to myself, this is a bike that's going to, in 10 years' time, it will need a new battery and that'll cost me money.
Mm.
But there's this lovely element of like, this is great. My footprint is so low.
Yeah.
And this thing is fabulous.
I think that's absolutely right. I think there's need for town planners to have an entire system of bike tracks throughout the whole city.
Yeah.
So that's going to take some doing, but you can see what's going on. This stuff isn't easy. This stuff is a whole system. The whole thing has to move. So instead of take it out of the earth, make it and dispose of it, now it's got to be continuous recycling. So whenever you buy something like that, you've got to ask yourself the question, well, what happens after I've finished using it? Yeah. Because he's going to have to know.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it is that real throwaway society, which I find frustrating.
Massive,
And it's just, you know, the television's broken, you ditch it.
Yeah, we don't care about it afterwards.
We don't care about it. My uncle, his job was a television repairman. I mean, does that even exist anymore?
Yeah. There are people good at mechanics, and I've got to give it to the Australian Mail. They're actually very good at repairing everything because that has been their forte. You know, so they're good at repairing things, but now we're getting products where they don't have a chance of repairing them.
I was going to say, my mum, her trade was a seamstress, and people would come in and they'd have their clothes repaired.
Yeah.
I wonder how much people do that now.
Well, they can't. If you've got microchips in it, the only place that makes microchips is Taiwan or something, so you can't replace them. So the evolution of what's going to happen is going to be quick because not only do we have to find a repurposing of everything, and in some things like fashion and that, it's easy, but in the case of batteries, we don't know.
No.
I mean, how do you recycle a battery? You can take the products out of it, but it's not a cheap thing to do. And if it's not cheap, well, then is it going to destroy the economy and everyone's going to end up poor? That doesn't work either. So probably one of the things that gardening is going to be fundamental in is regeneration. Like, there's a lot of deserts in the world and they need not be. I mean, your backyard might have been a desert when you bought it. It might have just been there and be nothing. Yeah. You know? But you can come in and you know it, and so do I, because mine was just clay, like it was cracked and it was full of sow sob. It had nothing going for it. But after about 5 years, you put your hoe in it and you drag the hoe through it and it's like chocolate cake. You know?
Oh, and I was just saying to Trevor before that my son cleared out a new veggie patch. And so my granddaughter and I planted the veggies, although to be fair, she mostly trod on the seedlings. But I madly planted all. And it is, now that I can guarantee you that spot would not have grown vegetables. And I know for a fact, because I tried to turn that into a veggie patch probably about 10 years ago.
Yep.
And then I just put in a whole bunch of shrubs. Mm. Anyway, and my son pulled them out because they kind of had their dash. We put in tons and tons of chook manure.
Yeah.
The plants are leaping out the ground.
Yeah, well, you and I have got that in common. Yeah. That we both agree on that, and that you can take really terrible soil and you can turn it into chocolate cake. You can turn it into something fabulous, where you just throw the potatoes in and they don't stop growing until you tell them to stop. You know? So that is probably the sustainability of the garden approach from a different direction, and that it's regenerating lost gardens, you see, because we've lost so many.
We have.
We've overgrazed the farms, but in the city we've piled junk up in the creeks and we've put rubbish everywhere and we paved it all. We haven't really been good to the soil either, you see, and we both know that if you're good to the soil, it repays you.
Yeah.
So I think that's where gardening going. On top of that, I think there is this idea that buy local. I mean, that seems very simple, but it's worldwide, which is funny. It's funny with the concept, because everyone's saying, well, buy where you are, because then you don't have to bring cake in from Scotland. You know?
Oh, no. There's actually, we're very lucky here in Gawler, there's even I think it's once a month, they meet on Julian Terrace, there's a swap, and you bring your excess produce and you swap. I've only gone once, but I actually just brought a whole pile of lovely gardening magazines and people use those gardens. I thought, fantastic, all these people are using them.
Yeah.
And then I took home bunches of fabulous spinach, made this absolutely magnificent giant spinach lasagna. A friend of mine actually goes every month, and what's so delightful about it is that she doesn't have a huge garden, but she's really great at drying fruit.
Mm.
So her and I have a bit of an agreement where any excess we have, and I remember one time, Trevor, you gave me a whole bunch of grapes. I gave her the grapes, she dried them all, and then I had half and she had half. It was actually a fabulous sustainable concept sort of thing. We were really thrilled with that.
Yeah.
And I've kept them in my office, and it's like eating lollies, honestly, dried grapes. They're different to buying sultanas.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. We can buy locally.
Yeah, I think that's an incredibly good example, and you can swap too. Doesn't sound like much, but everywhere people are, well, gardeners have always had excess.
Yeah,
if you put in the whole packet of seed, you've got 300.
You absolutely.
Know? Doesn't matter what it is, you've got 300, and it's going to be too many for you because they'll go to seed before you finish picking them, you know?
Yeah.
So there is this thing of swapping, which is a great idea, really, when you think about it on a scale of a city. Well, if everyone in the city was doing that, there'd be some with orchards and some with carrot patches and some with sheep, and they'd all swap, you know?
Oh, and I love that.
And that would be sustainable, because there's actually no cost involved, and that is an old thing. It's sort of like guerrilla merchandising, in that you're outside of the main economic thing.
Do you remember years ago, Paul Keating, who I do love, good old Paul, but do you remember Paul Keating when, we had the recession we had to have, and then people started bartering, and then there was, correct me if I'm wrong, I could be wrong, I was very young when it all happened, but he was talking about trying to find a way to tax bartering, and I thought, well, good luck with that, because there's nothing a gardener loves more than sharing their produce. I honestly believe that.
I think so, yeah, because it's pride and joy. Have a look at this capsicum, baby.
I know, Shami, your zucchini. But So, you know, I have a neighbour who loves the great big boat zucchinis, and so Trevor is more than happy to offload them. And yeah, I've
that's
got
skillful,
oh look, and I've got, just thinking, in my street, my neighbour has a lemon tree that's much better than mine, and you leave the pomegranates and stuff. But I do remember laughing, thinking, well, how do you tax bartering? But again, that's a fabulous sustainable way.
You can't. It's more or less like trying to tell people they can't give presents to each other.
Mm.
So you can't, but that doesn't, it's not going to be, I mean, what will affect the economy is that if you do called homesteading, you look on the YouTube and you see that there are people who are doing this seriously. Like, you know how that guy who does no dig gardening?
Oh, yep.
He's got several workers and he produces a lot.
Yeah.
And there'd be, in America and England, there'd be a lot of people who are doing those, you know how you go to the supermarket now and you get this great lettuce that's been packed in cellophane.
Yeah.
And a bit of carbon dioxide, and it's as fresh as the day it was picked. And I went to the Doulis the other day. Jeez, you've been there for lunch?
Oh, no, it's fabulous.
They got good salads there. Fresh as can be. Yeah. So once you taste a fresh salad, you're not going backwards. You know, you're not going back to the old stale stuff, are you?
But do you think as a gardener, look, I'm just thinking that sustainability in the garden, you become, like, okay, the sustainability is how do we keep things going? But, I mean, I think with my beetroot, for example, right?
Your beetroot.
The beetroot I grew, which was fabulous. But I was chopping the leaves off as salad as much as I was waiting for the bulbs to grow.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of headset with sustainable gardening, and I'm even, like, I plant now thinking what's going to attract the bees, what's going to attract the birds. And that, I think, is sustainable as well, because you need to be setting things up for, like you said, what's, you know, regeneration, reviving what's lost. And I love that concept. Reducing food waste. I think gardeners are good at that. And I probably throw things to the chooks that they wouldn't necessarily eat, but then I think it sits there in a pile, merrily composting down. I shift it to one side and I dig it up and, you
That's
know.
That's what I'm doing now too.
Yeah.
So I'm just keeping the soil of the chicken run, keeping that full of my compost, which I used to have to turn. But now I'm thinking, well, all I got to do is rake it up into a heap, and all the chooks say, Trevor, you are not the scratching expert. We are. And they scratch it, and they throw it all over the place again, and I pile it up again, and by the time we've finished it and it's rained a bit, well, then they've done the compost turning for me.
And like my mum, she's moved into a grey commune. Some people call it a retirement village. I call it the grey commune, you know, lifestyle village. But she has passionately gotten into indigenous plants.
Yeah, well, that
And how fabulously sustainable are those? And she's always been kind of more into the annuals and things. But her thing is like, this is great. Like, I plant them and I enjoy them. And they still need to be pruned and fertilised. Like, people think indigenous plants, you just ignore them. You don't. But she's loving that she's actually got a really sustainable garden. Because it's not requiring that constant kind of, I guess, that input into the economy where you plant. I mean, she's got a gorgeous little patch where she plants her pansies and stuff because she loves it. But I love that. And she even said to me, she goes, I just feel like I've got these plants that I'm watching and they change constantly throughout the season, whereas she was very much into annual gardening, which is not sustainable. It's lovely, but it's not sustainable.
Well, I mean, I think nature, I think we've had other podcasts where we've said that nature is a way of maintaining your sanity too.
Oh, God, yeah.
Because this is about you just watching.
I don't know that it's worked on my mum. She'll be listening to this, Mum, you're perfectly sane.
Well, yeah, and I'm not saying that so much as all of us need a break, you most of all, you know. So, to re-establish that natural biodiversity, yes, you put in native plants because they do grow, and they're great. It's a great plus.
I know, it's like this revelation. Oh, my God, plants made to the area.
Yeah, if you stop using your poisons, and all the birds, the lizards, and the insects, worms, and predators, they all come back.
I know, it's great.
And that's more fun than gardening, really.
It is more fun than gardening. I was sitting with my granddaughter the other day, and I've taught her to, if she sits quietly, the butterflies will stay.
Yeah, butterflies.
And I say to her, see the bees? We don't need to be scared of them. Just say, thank you, bees. She goes, thank you, bees. Just sit and watch them. And that, I agree with you, that is way more fun. It's so exciting.
It's also mental, isn't it?
Yeah,
I mean, that just gets you out of your self-concern. So you start, without even really meaning to, you start to just watch what other creatures are doing and how they're interacting. And so you realise that you are really not the only thing in this world. Mm-hmm. And so you get out of that self-obsession. So the only other thing I'd like to say, because I think this should be a fairly quick program, yeah, only just on gardening, I think the cities are definitely the ones. The 10 biggest cities in the world are definitely increasing in temperature because you're bound to, because they're just building more and more concrete and they're just pumping out more and more hot air and they're just using more and more energy and they're just running more and more cars. So the cities are what they're talking about when they say that the global temperature is rising. Mm-hmm. So the cities are only a small fraction of the surface area. A bigger fraction of the surface area is those deserts, and we do need to really get them back. And surprisingly, those two things can balance each other out, because there's a hell of a lot of, you know, sewage wastage in that. For thousands of years, people have known that human waste is very, very fertile, so long as it doesn't contain any pathogens. So the cities can recycle all their water and all their sewage fertilizer, and that would do a great thing for the desert. You know, if you came along and you dumped that on the desert, we know from our personal experience, all you got to do is come along on top of sand or clay and dump a, you know, 200 mil of compost, fertilizer or whatever, and things begin to change because grass starts to grow. And you don't even have to plant the grass, because my wife has a saying that there's no such thing as soil. It's just weed seed that looks like soil. And up will come all the weeds that everybody wanted, you know. So, but also, I think the city's got a lot to do. They are doing it. Solar generation, you put bloody solar panels on every roof in every house and you got more power than you can use. You know?
Look, it's my actual bugbear. I think in a country like Australia, it should just all be solar panels. And I mean, in Holland, the land of my people, there are roads that are actually solar. Roads, so they're made from recycled plastic.
Yeah.
And they're solar panels. There's no need for electricity.
No, well, we've got
except for your vacuum cleaner that you bought.
No, that can run off solar panels.
Can it?
Darwin to Adelaide solar race demonstrates that the electric vehicles can be made of solar panels too, and they can.
Yeah.
So although you might have a restricted area, you might only be able to cover 120 kilometres in your electric car. If it recharges all the time, you do more than that.
Oh, absolutely.
So that's about the last thing I had to say, in that the cities are the ones where people are gravitating towards. So they have to recycle everything. They have to recycle everything, and they also got to cut down on their usage, because the wastage of food, water and materials is phenomenal. So, you know, the cities are the ones who are all pushing. They say uranium is safer than coal. I know that. But anyway, that whole debate about global warming is actually the debate about cities, I think.
I think so too. I do. I agree with you. And I think we are. I think there's this slow kind of undercurrent. To be honest, COVID has raised awareness because people are at home more.
True.
I mean, I look at some of those fantastic shows, a bit like you, where I love those shows where I go, oh, look at that living wall they've got. And look, they're growing mushrooms just outside. I mean, look, that's a level that I wouldn't engage in. But I think what we need to remember is you don't need to engage at that level. You just need to engage at some level.
Yep.
And that's what's really important. So when we're looking at sustainability, as I explained to someone, what COVID highlighted was that we don't have a sustainable economy.
Yep.
We don't have a sustainable way of living. And we actually need to step back and rethink, because when COVID hit, and one of the things that annoyed me is everyone said, oh, you big conglomerates, I suppose, for want of another word, as my son says, you know, we're not a capitalist society, we're a corporate one. But the big companies, everyone was like, oh, you know, only shop between these hours. What about the local butcher? What about the local baker? What about the local... Even in that way.
Mm.
And Australia, actually, because when I went to Europe, all those things still existed. There's a bookshop and a hairdresser. Obviously, we have hairdressers here. But there was a dairy shop. I loved that. I love that. I think it'll come back. And then that's part of also employment and trade, which might be something we can talk about next time when we talk about sustainability. How do we have those kind of sustainable trades?
No, it's definitely a long talk. I mean, because the whole thing's evolving. That's what makes it sort of interesting. Just like your garden evolves. I mean, that potato soil I was talking about looked like chocolate. That's evolution, because it didn't start out like that. And after year one, it wasn't like that. And after year two, it wasn't like that, but it keeps getting better. And so the organic gardening thing is about evolving ideas and things getting better as you add to them.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are we going to talk about next month, Trevor?
No idea. Is it going to be next month?
June will be cold. We'll talk about cold things next month.
Okay.
Should we talk about cold things? I'd love to. We'll talk about whether our sweet peas...
Maybe we should talk about warm things in order not to be
cold. Actually, that's probably a really good idea. We'll talk about whether our sweet peas are working. What do you reckon?
Firewood.
All right. So that's May from us. May the 4th be with you.
Yes. May the 4th has passed.
All right. Thank you. That's from Michelle and
Trevor.